Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock and pop music news, but first, these musical trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us today from OnThisDay.com and Yamaha.com. Question number one. It was on this very day, back in 1964, you may remember, that 11 boys were suspended at a Coventry, England school for what? Was it A, for singing a disrespectful version of God Save the Queen? Was it B, cheering for their football team while wearing tutus? Was it C, for having a hairstyle like Mick Jagger? Or was it D, for smashing their guitars on the stage after performing in a school concert? So what were those naughty British schoolboys suspended for anyway? And question number two, Bartolomeo Cristofori of Italy is credited with inventing the piano in about 1700. So when was the pipe organ invented? Was it A, about the same time as the piano? Was it B, about 100 years after the piano? Was it C, about 200 years after the piano? Was it D, about 100 years before the piano? Or was it E, over 1,900 years before the piano? The pipe organ's invention. When was that anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of May 26th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1967 that Columbia and RCA Victor announced that they would raise the list price of mono albums by a dollar on June the 1st. It was the first increase since 1953. Record price increase, 1967, today. And it was 20 years ago today, 2003, that Liza Minnelli sang an a cappella version of Liza with a Z with Luciano Pavarotti live via satellite for a charity show on Italian television. She had been hospitalized 2 days early after falling and breaking her right kneecap. Liza with a knee and Pavarotti today in 2003. Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2 introduces our classical music news. It's titled The Most Soothing Pieces of Classical Music in Mental Health Awareness Week. This is published on the 19th of May, 2023, ClassicFM.com. Various studies have proven the calming effect of classical music. as well as having the power to ease nerves and jitters and decrease your heart rate. It can also lower your cortisol levels and increase blood flow to the brain. There's even a study out there that says it takes just minutes for music to make you happy and to start smiling and laughing more. In Mental Health Awareness Week from 15 to 21 of May, which this year focuses on anxiety, we asked some of our evening Classic FM presenters to tell us about the pieces of classical music that bring them calm and focus when times are tough. From Debussy to Delius, here are the soothing pieces they chose. Rachmaninoff's Adagio from Piano Concerto No. 2, the song playing in the background now. If any piece has that little touch of magic, it's what we like to call Rock 2. It's simply one of the beautiful pieces of music, with soaring melody after soaring melody, and the nation agrees about that magic too. It's currently sitting at the top of the Classic FM Hall of Fame. Then there's Delius on Hearing the First Cuckoo in Spring. I find a walk in the park, or ideally a big country ramble, really helpful when I'm being stressed or down. But of course, that isn't always possible. Listening to this piece conjures up the beauty and serenity of the outdoors, which I find instantly calming and restful. Then there's Bach Prelude from Cello Suite No. 1. This piece is just like a big musical hug. It's one of the pieces we used to have playing in the house all the time when I was growing up, and it's really helped me over the years when I need a moment of quiet reflection. When in doubt, always turn to Bach. Then there's Mahler's Adagietto from Symphony No. 5. Like so many people, I associate Mahler's Symphony No. 5 with Death in Venice, a restless and at times disturbing movie. Mahler himself called the first movement a funeral march, but the Adagietto was a love song for his new wife, and it is ripe with emotion. I adore Venice and once spent a very happy time studying there, so for me, this music brings back positive memories of a special and dreamy time, a certain way to lift my mood. Then there's John Barry's The Beyondness of Things. Now, if ever there was a calm classics favorite, this is it. A beautiful melody, evocative harmony, and the sort of contemporary touch only John Barry can add. A pure musical tonic for when you need that moment of stillness. Then there's Chopin's Ballade No. 4. Chopin, always Chopin when times are tough. It's difficult to choose a single piece, but there is such a wide range of emotion in Ballade No. 4. It seems like the perfect choice, poetic and complex, a mirror on our sometimes turbulent inner lives. And then there's, last but not least, Debussy's Clair de Lune. Popular for good reason, I adore this piece so much that it is the ringtone on my phone. Who wants to be jolted into answering a call? I'd rather be gently bathed in moonlight and believe the world is a calm and peaceful place. Jesse Ware's Begin Again introduces our disco and house music news. It's entitled Jesse Ware's Dance Fever. The UK singer offers a euphoric survey of disco and house music. This is written by John Freeman, published in Rolling Stone magazine, May 2023. Jesse Ware's 2020 release, What's Your Pleasure, was one of the early pandemic's great musical revelations, a pop album that successfully brought the movement, yearning, and euphoria of the dance club into everyone's homes. It was a perfect setting for the British singer-songwriter's voice, luxurious and sophisticated, but still highly accessible. Ware's follow-up to that achievement, titled That Feels Good, further zeroes in on the many pleasures of dance music. Bodies and bodily sensations are emphasized, while inhibitions are shaken off in pursuit of personal and communal ecstasy. It's also brighter and funkier than its predecessor, full of big brass and grooves that amplify the feeling of joy. The article skips down and ends with this. The LP is at its best when it pinpoints the connection between body and emotion. Begin Again, the song playing in the background now, sounds like something out of the classic Sail Soul catalog, with lush choral melodies cascading through the groove. Why does all the purest love get filtered through machines? Ware wonders. It's a plea for the kind of community only a dance floor can provide. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, Sting Has a Stark Prediction About AI and the Future of Music. The former frontman of The Police said, artificial intelligence doesn't impress me at all. This is published in HuffingtonPost.co.uk, May 18th, 2023, by Ash Percival. Sting has predicted musicians will face, quote-unquote, a battle. With the rise of artificial intelligence and its use within the music industry in the coming years, the former The Police frontman said the coming years would see a fight to defend the, quote-unquote, human capital of music, amid an already growing number of songs using AI to recreate the work of well-known musicians in recent months. Speaking to the BBC, Sting said, "The building blocks of music belong to us, to human beings. That's going to be a battle we all have to fight in the next couple of years, defending our human capital against AI. The tools are useful, but we have to be driving them," he said. "I don't think we can allow the machines to just take over. We have to be wary." He added that he felt the same way about AI-generated songs as he did about movies that use CGI. "It doesn't impress me at all," he said. "I get immediately bored when I see a computer-generated image, GPI. I imagine I will feel the same way about AI making music. Maybe for electronic dance music it works, but for songs, you know, expressing emotions, I don't think I will be moved by it." Artists including Eminem, Drake, The Weeknd, and Oasis have all seen fake songs produced by AI using their vocals in recent months. A song featuring AI-generated vocals from Drake and The Weeknd called Heart on My Sleeve was pulled from streaming services after going viral last month. Record labels Universal Music Group condemned it for infringing content created with generative AI, saying that its original posting by Ghostwriter on TikTok demonstrated why platforms had a fundamental legal and ethical responsibility to prevent the use of their services in ways that harm artists. An 8-track album titled The Lost Tapes, Volume 1, was released under the name Alcis, which, imagine what another album from Oasis would sound like. The collection featured music and lyrics written by real-life band Breezer, but used vocals from former member Liam Gallagher, generated by artificial intelligence. After hearing one of the tracks, Liam declared it was, quote-unquote, better than all the other snizzle out there. He added that the track was mad as F and said, "I sound mega." A clip of an AI Harry Styles covering Louis Capaldi's Wish You the Best also recently surfaced on TikTok.
We were good, we were cold, kind of dream that can't be sold. We were right till we weren't, built a home and watched it burn. I didn't want to leave you, I didn't want to lie. Started to cry but then remembered I can buy myself flowers, write my name in the sand, talk to myself for hours, say things you don't
Miley Cyrus's Flowers introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled, Let's All Enjoy the Triumph of Mileyism. Flowers and Cyrus's upcoming album, Endless Summer Vacation, are the culmination of a two-decade pop journey. This is published in Rolling Stone, April 2023 issue by Rob Sheffield. What a moment to be a Miley Cyrus fan. Flowers is more than just a surprise comeback hit. It's the triumph of Mileyism. It's been 10 years since her last number one hit, Wrecking Ball, at the height of her tabloid scandal, Electro Sleaze, Bangers era. But now she has finally transformed into a kind of old-school, grown-up legend she's always wanted to be. Flowers and her Saturn Return post-divorce album, Endless Summer Vacation, finish off her unlikely journey from Hannah Montana to world-wise adulthood. This moment is the cherry on top of one of modern pop's longest, most bizarre stories. Miley's only 30 years old, but she's already been a mega-famous artist for nearly two decades. She started out as a Disney mopette playing a fictional pop star with a secret life as a regular all-American girl. Hannah Montana was a funhouse of mirrors. Identity-wise, her dad was played by her real-life dad, Billy Ray Cyrus, the achy-breaky heart dude who had already played himself in a nightmare scene in a David Lynch movie. The article skips down and ends with this. Her new music makes it sound like Miley is setting out to write her own classic oldies, the kind of songs she would choose to cover. She's showing off the pipes of a grown woman who's been through it and back, mourning a marriage the way she used to mourn Pablo the Blowfish. It's the song, the album, the moment she spent her whole career building up to. Now, more than ever, she's just being Miley. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in 1964, you may remember, that 11 boys were suspended at a Coventry, England school for what? Was it A, singing a disrespectful version of God Save the Queen? Was it B, cheering for their football team while wearing tutus? Was it C, for having a hairstyle like Mick Jagger? Or was it D, for smashing their guitars on the stage after performing in a school concert? Correct answer. Well, as noted in the website onthisday.com, it was on this very day back in 1964 that 11 boys were suspended at a Coventry, England school for having a hairstyle like Mick Jagger. Answer C is therefore the correct answer. And the answer to our second question, Bartolomeo Cristofori of Italy is credited with inventing the piano in about 1700. So, when was the pipe organ invented? A, about the same time as the piano. B, about 100 years after the piano. C, over 200 years after the piano. D, about 100 years before the piano. Or E, over 1,900 years before the piano. Correct answer. Answer E, over 1,900 years before the piano. As noted in an article published in Yamaha.com titled The Origins of the piano was invented by Bartolomeo Cristofori, 1655 to 1731, of Italy. Cristofori was unsatisfied by the lack of control that musicians had over the volume level of the harpsichord. He's credited for switching out the plucking mechanism with a hammer to create the modern piano in around the year 1700. The instrument was actually first named clavicembalo, called piano e forte, literally a harpsichord that can play soft and loud noises. This was shortened to the now common name piano. And as noted in a May 28, 2018 article titled The History of the Pipe Organ, published in ClassicHistory.net by Thomas Akraven, the first pipe organs were conceived and built in Greece around 200 B.C. There's no evidence of any kind to suggest that pipe organs were in existence before the Hellenistic period or to have originated anywhere outside of Hellenistic influence. Later Greek authors claim that the organ was invented by one man, Ctesibias of Alexandria, a 3rd century B.C. engineer. For him, the organ served as a demonstration of the principles of hydraulics rather than as a musical instrument. It's not clear how the organ came to be such a standard church instrument in Western Europe starting around the year 900. A key to this puzzle, no doubt, lies in the development of the Benedictine order. New abbeys were cultural centers in and of themselves, and large churches gave the opportunity to advance music in general. Amongst all branches of Christianity at this time, the Benedictines were perhaps the only community to develop organs and polyphonic music, and to do so as a part of their church service. Organs were objects of mechanical ingenuity, much like the elaborate clocks for which cathedrals were becoming the vital centers. During the medieval period, sliders were replaced with a keyboard, many times even more than one keyboard. The number of pipes used was greatly expanded, increasing the total available notes to around 40. The low pipes in the largest cathedral organs produced some of the lowest sounds ever created by man. Deep sounds were not characteristic of medieval music. It seems reasonable to assume that the movement towards a bass-dominated nature of Western music from the 16th century onward could have sprung from the large organ pipes of the 14th and 15th century cathedrals. Stops were keeping the wind from operating all the other pipes in the same row. And by the year 1500, the average organ in Western Europe probably consisted of 10 separate stops. An influence during the 19th century was the widely available assortment of printed music. This resulted in a dilution of regional styles. A vast amount of German music, much of it from Leipzig, was spread throughout Europe. The international revival of the music of J.S. Bach meant that organists in England, France, Spain, and Italy found their instruments to be inadequate. Thus, imported music was responsible for persuading many organists to have their instruments rebuilt. After the 19th century, the organ builder had a vast array of techniques to choose from. Even the least experienced builder had countless books and tools available to help with design and construction. Newly built railroads allowed musicians and builders alike to travel to and inspect any kind of organ they chose. Economic progress of the area brought tremendous amounts of material, resources, unheard of before, and the enormous amount of experience from building thousands of churches had yielded labor-saving designs and techniques. The organ proliferated out of the grand cathedrals of the major cities and into every small town on the continent. An example of a truly modern organ is the one in the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. It has 186 ranks with a total of 10,647 pipes. The organ is operated by electronic keys linked to valves beneath the organ pipes and has about 200 stops. So let's close out today's program with one of the pieces that were listed in today's article about the most soothing pieces of classical music, Debussy's Clair de Lune, the piano version, of course. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.